This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
You're listening to Keyboard Kimura, the official mixed martial arts podcast of The Province. Here are your hosts, Paul Chapman and E. Spencer Kite.
Back in your life for the first time in far too long, it is the Keyboard Kimura podcast here on Province Sports Radio. I am E. Spencer Kite. I am greatly sorry for our absence. It has been a busy month with a trip out to Ottawa, buying a new house, getting ready to move into it, figuring out UFC 200 stuff, a redesign of the Province website, Patrick being a busy man about town buying Jordans and modeling them on Instagram. But we are finally back at you for International Fight Week, talking about a tetra pack of fight cards Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. 35 fights, 5 championship bouts, Brock Lesnar. Patrick, it is the busiest, craziest week in UFC history, and I can't express how excited I am. What about you?
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, I've been thinking about it for such a long time. And now that it's finally here, it's like, you know, being warm and giddy ahead of Christmas Eve. It's just that special time of year has finally come for MMA fans worldwide. And honestly, it's a little bit surreal that it's even happening, that we get to see all this happen, that so many unanswered questions will be answered throughout the week. Man, I'm pumped up, and I can't wait for it to get started on Thursday night.
So we are taping this on Tuesday evening. You fine folks will be listening to it probably Wednesday morning or sometime after that. So we've still got about 48 hours before the first event, or by this time, 48 hours from now, we will be into the main card of the first event. So I'm going to say this and knock on wood still, because, you know, superstitions being what they are. We've made it to this point with very few changes, with very few injuries, not a lot really being taken away from these cards since they've been announced. That's a massive accomplishment for the UFC. And when you look at this week in its totality, this is, to me, the best collection of fights we've ever seen put together. UFC 200 is just a phenomenal show top to bottom. And the crazy thing is that after this 3-pack, we've still got 3 more events this month.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. I mean, stacked back to back to back, and there's some really, really, really great events coming on the way, too.
So we're going to just jump right into it because there's a lot to cover. As I said, 5 title fights, Brock Lesnar. We're going to get to all of those, plus some under-the-radar fighters or fights that Patrick and I are both looking forward to. But we'll start at the start of the week, at the first event, at the first championship fight, Rafael Dos Anjos defending the lightweight title against Eddie Alvarez. I had a piece in today's paper, Tuesday's paper, talking about Dos Anjos and Miesha Tate collectively. How I feel like there's a lot of people that don't necessarily respect these two as champions yet, because it feels in both cases like there's one or two other fighters that everybody's looking at and saying, well, that's who I think is actually going to be the champion. We'll get to Miesha and who those people are. They're fairly obvious in a little bit, but with Dos Anjos, it's obviously the specter of Khabib Nurmagomedov. But the point I made in the piece is that, yeah, history is there, and two years ago and change, Khabib got the victory over RDA. But since then, there has been nothing that makes you think RDA couldn't reverse that outcome. He has looked phenomenal to me since that fight. I think it's one of the best 5-fight winning streaks we have going in the UFC right now. And I think this is a fight that's tailor-made for him against Eddie Alvarez to come out, show out, and really cement himself at the top of this division. What do you think?
Yeah, man. I agree with that. I mean, it in his last, you know, couple fights, when he won the title against Anthony Pettis at 185, you know, a lot of people weren't fully convinced, you know, even though the performance was so dominant, I don't think people were sold on RDA as a champion necessarily, as someone who could have a long run as the lightweight champion, given, you know, how deep that division is. Then he, you know, put a show on against Donald Cerrone on Fox, and that kind of made people, I think, be like, whoa, okay, all right, well, this dude, you know, he's really got some skills. So I think that this opportunity now, you know, it's a fight pass main event. I think it's just a great opportunity, like you said, for him to really, you know, solidify himself as that dude in the 155-pound division. Obviously, as you mentioned before, there is that shadow of Khabib Nurmagomedov. He's there. But as you said, I mean, he, you know, RDA is a much different fighter, I think, from even that time, you know, back in April 2014 when he fought Nurmagomedov. He's improved his striking vastly. He looks sharper, you know, quicker. He just looks really, really fine-tuned in every area, in every aspect of his game. And I think that that's going to show against, you know, and Eddie Alvarez, who is a very actually tough guy and stylistically an interesting matchup.
Yeah, absolutely. Not to take anything away from Eddie, and we'll touch on him and what he's done since his debut in a second, but it's really interesting to me. You mentioned that fight with Pettis and the fight against Cerrone. He goes out, he mops the floor against Anthony Pettis to win the title, then follows that up by kicking Donald Cerrone in what he referred to in Ottawa as his weak ass liver, which just absolutely stopped me dead in my tracks at the press conference when he said it. And he started cracking up on stage. If you haven't seen it, it's Cowboy was in great spirits that week. It was awesome to see him that happy and making fun of himself. But even if you go before his winning the title, he absolutely cleaned up Nate Diaz. And people will make the argument of, oh, well, Nate wasn't training and he hadn't fought in a year. But Nate is the darling of the UFC right now, having just gone out and beat Conor McGregor back in March. And if you put him in there with Dos Anjos again, I'm picking Dos Anjos again, and it's not close to me. And so I really think this is a chance if he can go out and beat, as you said, a super tough guy, a super durable veteran who has a world of elite championship experience in Eddie Alvarez, who has looked good in his last two fights, not great, but always done what he needed to do to get the victory. I think this is a chance for Dos Anjos to take that next step forward and sort of solidify himself, so that whether it's Khabib, whether it's Tony Ferguson, whether it's, you know, Nate Diaz, depending on what happens with the Conor McGregor situation, I think this is a chance for him to just really set himself up as that not going to pick against him until somebody beats him champion at lightweight that we haven't really seen for a while, because it has been kind of a revolving door for the last few years and the last several champions.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, you mentioned that win over Nate Diaz, and even going back, you know, starting with that, you know, knockout he had of Benson Henderson, which really surprised people. I think that's when people kind of started noticing RDA as a guy who, you know, might have the potential to do something special in that division. But I don't think people were yet as, you know, as they aren't yet sold on him as a champion. I don't know if they were sold on him as an elite talent at that time either. A lot of people attributed it to, you know, different, you know, things, luck or whatever, but he's proved time and time again that it's not luck that's gotten him here. It's his skill set. And against Eddie Alvarez, it's a really interesting test, because the last couple guys he's faced, you know, Cerrone and Pettis, very, you know, dynamic strikers and, you know, very, very good submission specialists in their own right. Eddie Alvarez is kind of a, you know, he has the boxing skills. He has, you know, a very underrated ground game. But he also has that kind of gritty, kind of grind mentality that I think that we haven't seen RDA face a guy like that just yet. And I think that'll be interesting to see how he deals with a guy in Eddie Alvarez, who I think is going to be on him the entire fight. He's going to be pushing the pace. He's going to be trying to get in RDA's face and you know, getting every opportunity that he can to pin him up against the cage, to put him down on the ground, to do whatever he can to get the win. Because Eddie Alvarez, to me, you know, he's not the kind of dude, at least at the UFC level, that we've seen that is going to go out there and try to knock your head off with, you know, an explosive shot. You know, granted, it might happen, but he's one of these guys who, you know, he's been in championship situations before in Bellator. He's, you know, he's done, you know, these kind of fights before. He understands that it is a five-round grind. And I think that that's going to be different from guys that he's faced before. Anthony Pettis, you know, he was an inexperienced champion at the time that he fought, you know, fought against RDA. So it'll be interesting to see a guy who's actually had some championship pedigree, you know, albeit in another organization, to see what he can do against the champion of the UFC.
Yeah, you used the word gritty. I was going to use the word grimy to describe Eddie Alvarez. I mean, and I say that as an absolute compliment. I mean, this is a dude that is impossible to put away. Tough as nails. We saw him come back against Gilbert Melendez to win a split decision in that fight. We saw him, you know, fight a tactical fight against Anthony Pettis to get the victory. I think the addition of Mark Henry as his head coach this time around and reconnecting kind of fully with the crew at Ricardo Almeida, BJJ, Frankie Edgar in the Iron Army and all of those guys, I think that has an opportunity to be a real factor here, because I think that is a very underrated crew of guys that, you know, coaches and training partners and teammates that don't get enough respect. But I also look at those two fights that got Eddie Alvarez to this point, and I think he just did enough to win in both. He was able to take advantage of, you know, a tiring Gilbert Melendez and an Anthony Pettis that we've seen still has some wrestling deficiencies and grind out those wins, as you mentioned. I just don't think you can do that against the Rafael Dos Anjos that we've seen over the last couple of years. We will make our picks and we will have the Punch Drunk predictions each fight day throughout this week. But as we're talking about it, who you got and how?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those tough things, because I can see in my head, in my crystal ball, how Eddie Alvarez could grind out another like split decision in that way. If he really gets on RDA really early, I could see it happening. But at the same time, I still do think that Dos Anjos is just too, you know, dynamic at this point in his career. I think he'll cause too many problems on the feet, and he'll be able to get out of those dangerous situations on the ground. So I think it's going to be a hard-fought fight, but I got, you know, RDA by decision.
I agree with you on the victor. I think Dos Anjos retains. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that he gets a finish in the championship rounds. I'm thinking fourth-round submission, just kind of wear down Eddie Alvarez, beat him up, get him hurt, get those eyes swollen up and closing, get him bloody, and eventually get to a point where he's able to take him down and get a finish on the ground. But I do agree with you that the champion retains, setting up, you know, wide open for the rest of the year going forward for him in the lightweight division. It is the Keyboard Kimura podcast on Province Sports Radio, talking all things International Fight Week, previewing and breaking down the five championship fights that are taking place between Thursday and Saturday. We've got one down. We're on to the second one. And I'm going to be honest, this is the one I'm looking forward to the most. Women's strawweight title. It is a rematch between Joanna Jędrzejczyk and Claudia Gadela. These two fought to a split decision in December 2014, with Jędrzejczyk getting the nod, going on to beat Carla Esparza in the very next fight, and subsequently become the darling of the strawweight division, one of the more popular fighters in the UFC, with her Instagram game, much like you, big fan of kicks, really sharp personality. We've talked about the way she just needles people instead of talking trash. And oh yeah, by the way, she's a hell of a fighter. Gadela has only fought once since then. And for me, that's the real curious point here is, can a fighter who has only had one fight since then, while Joanna's fought three additional times and looked tremendous in each, can Gadela make up that distance, or has she lost ground to Joanna going into this championship rematch?
Yeah, that's a really interesting point that, you know, you brought up for sure. I think that will play a factor. I mean, you can't, you know, especially with someone like Joanna Jędrzejczyk, who has really performed, you know, very explosively since that first fight with Claudia Gadela. You know, she came out and just destroyed Carla Esparza to win the title, then followed it up with, you know, an absolute, you know, mauling of Jessica Penne. Had a great top fight against Valerie Letourneau at 193. I think all these fights have, you know, made her better and given her that championship pedigree that, you know, Claudia, while a great fighter and while I do think that she has some skills that will give Joanna problems as they did the first time around, which was a controversial fight, I don't think it will be enough. I think the gap has widened to a point that Joanna will find a way to win this fight. It might be a tough one, but I do think that, you know, her skills have sharpened over these last three fights that she's had since the first Claudia fight, and I think that will show in a major way.
Well, and a couple other things that really, really factor for me or really weigh for me, sort of coinciding with what you said about her skills sharpening, is that championship confidence. There is a new swagger to Joanna Jędrzejczyk since that first fight with Claudia Gadelha, since she got that victory. We all remember she walked into UFC 185 as kind of the unknown person out of the four fighters in the championship bouts and stole the show that week, completely upstaged even pretty Tony Pettis, you know, a guy that we all expected. I mean, he was on the cover of a damn Wheaties box that week. That was sort of when that whole thing was out there as a big promotional thing. And here comes this seemingly quiet, unknown Polish girl strolls up on stage with her, you know, throwback 90s overalls with no straps up and a pair of J's on and just absolutely charms the pants off everybody, becomes the instant sensation. We've got videos of people trying to pronounce her name and her just laughing, being cute, wonderful Joanna. Then she goes into the cage and absolutely mollywops Carla Esparza. 3 months later, does the same damn thing to Jessica Penne, and now it's like, okay, she is a complete savage, and she's amusing, and she's charismatic. She has become a superstar. The other thing, and I think that really factors, like, I think there really is that, we've seen it sort of in reverse with Ronda Rousey and with Anthony Pettis, where as soon as that confidence gets broken, it's hard to rebuild. But when it's going, it helps you ride high. And I think Joanna is riding high on that right now. The other thing for me is this is a 5-round fight and Claudia Gadelha always has a hard time making the weight. She's missed in the past, not in the UFC, but in previous bouts along the way. And I just wonder if those two extra rounds that they have to work with, that Joanna has to work with, if she doesn't factor those in and just say, you know what, if I can keep this close through the first three, I know from the last fight that I got the better of her in round three and she's going to start fading. I know I can go five and go five at a good clip like I did in Australia against Valerie Letourneau. So I can sort of take my time and then crank it up down the stretch. I think that becomes a huge factor. I think Joanna gets it done. I think it's going to be a decision because I think Gadelha is just too damn tough to go away. But I think we see another victory for Joanna Jędrzejczyk here.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I mean, and the point about the championship swagger, I don't think that can be, you know, looked at as a small thing. It really does make a huge difference, honestly. Like having that, just that experience of being in there for five rounds, it is a completely different beast, you know, from going three rounds. I mean, you and I have talked to fighters before and champions before. And the three rounds to the five rounds, it does make a difference. They can you know, say that they're preparing for things a certain way, but at the same time, those two extra rounds really do something. And the champions are the guys, you know, and the gals who are gonna be, you know, finding that extra gear in rounds four and five. And I think that Joanna is gonna get that extra gear and, you know, earn a hard fought decision in this fight.
And there's just something very much different about training for five rounds and sparring in your gym with fresh opponents every 5 minutes and prepping that way. And the emotions that come with actually getting in there against an adversary, against somebody you have, and in this case, somebody that you have a intense, heated, emotional rivalry with, where you're then going five rounds with all of that extra energy coming out of you and all of that extra expenditure. I think it's going to be a factor that we look back on Saturday as we're prepping for 200, or Sunday and Monday as we're sort of sitting back and finally taking stock of everything. And I wouldn't be surprised if those things become a factor. If we hear that from Joanna, if we hear that from Claudia, we will find out on Friday night if we are correct on this. But that brings us to the swing fight of the five championship bouts. It is for the interim featherweight title. It is also a rematch. Jose Aldo, Frankie the Answer, Edgar. I'm going to let you start on this one, because as much as I'm excited about this fight, just in terms of the fight itself, I still can't get past the fact that we're having an interim title fight. So I'm going to let you start so that I can just kind of quell all of my Conor McGregor frustrations for a little bit.
Yeah, no, it is pretty insane, that's for sure. But at the same time, it's a fight that I'm very much looking forward to between, you know, the division's two best guys, not named Conor McGregor.
So, right.
You know, and it's crazy to me. I mean, this is the fourth fight on that main card. Can you imagine? That is just, like, absolutely bonkers to me. I mean, this card, it just shows you how extremely stacked this thing is. I cannot wait. But anyways, enough about the excitement level. The fight itself is a really interesting fight, and a rematch that I think that, you know, a lot of people are interested in, and to see how Frankie, you know, will kind of look now against Jose Aldo after Aldo's first, you know, knockout loss of his career, you know, and in pretty embarrassing fashion. Let's be honest, you know, it was a tough loss for Aldo, not only, you know, physically, but mentally. What does that do to Jose Aldo? And that's one of the questions. That's the biggest question, I think. To me, that's going to be interesting. Mentally, where is Jose Aldo at? And that is something that if Frankie Edgar, you know, can capitalize on that and win those mental matchups, you know, that can go a long way. As we know, you know, Frankie's not the kind of guy who's going to, you know, talk his crap and kind of, you know, get into Aldo's head that way like Conor did. But at the same time, you know, if Aldo gets, you know, frustrated early on when things aren't, you know, clicking his way, that could be an opportunity for Edgar to, you know, really kind of rattle him. And that'll be an interesting, you know, storyline heading into this fight. What Jose Aldo, you know, comes into that octagon, you know, is it going to be the one that we saw before the Conor McGregor fight? Because if so, then I could really, you know, you could really see Aldo getting back into form and putting it on Edgar. You know, that there's a possibility of that happening. But at the same time, I believe, I'm not fully convinced that he recovered mentally from that first, you know, Conor McGregor fight. So, you know, this is a great opportunity for Frankie to come in and make a statement, in my opinion.
I think you're 100% right that the big question here, and no pun intended, because Frankie's nickname is the answer, is sort of where Jose Aldo's at. You know what you're going to get with Frankie Edgar. You know he's going to be in shape. You know he's going to have energy for days. He's going to have great boxing. He's going to have great wrestling. He's going to have great sort of chaining the two together. Frankie Edgar, you can etch it in stone. You know what you're going to get. Jose Aldo is just a complete wild card here, because I was at UFC 194. I watched him walk into the cage and look a little bit rattled and look a little bit over emotional and then drop like a sack of bricks in 13 seconds. And he has said all the stuff about, you know, getting back to being the aggressive, dangerous finisher that I was before I got to the UFC and all of that stuff. And he's talking about not retiring until he gets a rematch with Conor McGregor. He's got to get through Frankie Edgar first. And there aren't many dudes that have looked better than Frankie Edgar over the last few fights. Knockout win over Chad Mendez, absolute domination against Cub Swanson, just continually, you know, clear unanimous decision against Uriah Faber in between those two, just continually kind of raising the bar, and he's fighting with a bit more of a chip on his shoulder, I think, these days, because he's pretty pissed off about having to wait around for Conor McGregor to make his decisions. I know the first fight was close and Jose Aldo got the victory. I think we're so far beyond that fight, and I think this is going to be another one of those fights where you look at it and you say, one guy is really moved forward and improved and evolved and gotten better since that fight, where Jose Aldo, at the absolute best to me, has stayed static and probably more likely taken a step backwards. I don't think he's as fast. I don't think he's as explosive. I don't think, to what we were saying about Joanna Jędrzejczyk, that the championship swagger is there. He's trying to have it. He's trying to go out and say, you know, I don't really think about the loss to Conor McGregor and it doesn't really register to me because it was 13 seconds and now whatever. But dude, you got knocked the bleep button out. That has to register. That has to have some kind of impact. I would not be at all surprised to see Frankie Edgar go out on Saturday night and absolutely wipe the floor with Jose Aldo.
Yeah. No, and I think that was a fantastic point about, you know, Jose Aldo trying to convince himself that he, you know, he still has that championship swagger. Because I think, you know, as what we've seen sort of, you know, in the media kind of leading up to this, he's trying to pump himself up. Like
100%.
He's doing everything to say to himself, hey, Jose, you're a champion. You can do this. And, you know, he's not convincing me, and he's not convincing a lot of people, I think, you know, in terms of what, you know, his sort of behavior has been up to this fight. You know, Frankie's been cold, calm, professional Frankie, and I think that that will show. And Jose Aldo, I think mentally, he's still reeling from that loss to Conor McGregor. He hasn't gotten over it, and, you know, he's not thinking about Frankie as much as he should. And I think that's going to be a costly mistake for him once he finds himself waking up off the canvas.
You might be too young for the reference, sorry. Other listeners may not remember it, but it feels like the old Saturday Night Live sketch, Stuart Smalley looking himself in the mirror and saying, you're good enough, you're smart enough, and gosh darn it, people like you. Like, this feels like Jose Aldo just telling himself, you're still a killer, you're still the best, you're still the champion. And he's going to walk in there and face a dude that believes it 100% every day of the week, no matter what, in Frankie Edgar. And I think Edgar gets the title. He becomes a two-division champion, which is something that has only been done twice. I know it's an interim title, so people will want to put a little asterisk on it, but it's still a huge accomplishment. And the fact that that's possible this weekend and we're not really fixated on it speaks to how bonkers this week of fights is and how crazy UFC 200 is. It is our International Fight Week preview here on Keyboard Kimura podcast on Province Sports Radio. E. Spencer Kite, Patrick Shiviklinski. We have two title fights remaining. The second to last title fight that we will get to, women's bantamweight title, Miesha Tate versus Amanda Nunes. Mentioned off the top in talking about Rafael Dos Anjos that I sort of mentioned him and Miesha Tate together in a piece in Tuesday's print edition of the paper. Also online at theprovince.com/MMA blog, shameless plug, that people kind of look at Miesha Tate as well and say, yeah, but there's still these other people. I think a lot of people feel like because she's 0-2 against Ronda Rousey, that if and when Ronda comes back, Misha's going to struggle to beat her. I think a lot of people would pick Holly Holm in a rematch, given the way that first fight played out, even though it finished with Holly Holm asleep and punching at the air. Mm-hmm. I think Miesha Tate is another one of those fighters that has just gotten continually better in the couple of years since that second loss to Ronda Rousey. We've seen her get settled in Las Vegas. Her boyfriend, Brian Caraway, taking the lead role as sort of her strategic coach and her skills coach. Robert Fallis doing a lot of work in terms of game planning and the mental side of things. And I think Miesha has kind of come into her own and sort of grown comfortable with her place in this division and accepting that she's never going to be the crossover superstar that Ronda Rousey is. And she didn't get the attention that Holly Holm got for shocking the world, rightfully so. But she's still a superstar. She's done what she always wanted to do, win the title, looked good doing it. And I think she goes out and just trucks Amanda Nunes. Like, Amanda Nunes, to me, I saw her fight with Valentina Shevchenko the same night that Miesha won the title. If you survive 7 minutes with Amanda Nunes where you don't get knocked out by one of those big shots, you're golden. And I think Miesha Tate does that easily because she survived – fighting Holly Holm, who has a much more diverse attack and has many more weapons that she brings to the table. I see this being almost a cakewalk for Misha Tate.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. I agree with that one wholeheartedly. I do think that Misha's going to come in there and you know, the thing with Amanda Nunes, as you mentioned, is, you know, if you can last those first initial few minutes, last the barrage that you know is coming, she's going to have that, you know, moment of, you know, high energy and come and blast at, you know, guns blazing at the champ. But, you know, Misha Tate is kind of made a name for herself off of, you know, being able to weather storms and then come back and win. So I think that for her, I think it's going to be business as usual in this fight. And I think she, you know, goes out there and has another impressive win. But in terms of, you know, it is kind of unfortunate when you look at, you know, we were talking about this with Rafael dos Anjos, you know, that he has that shadow of Khabib kind of lurking. And it seems like with Misha, she's got two shadows.
Right.
She's got Ronda and she's got Holly. So, I mean, she beat Holly. She never beat Ronda. But those are two fights that, you know, a lot of people still say that she'd lose, you know, if they fought, you know, again. But, you know, I tend to agree with you that I do think that, you know, Misha has turned a corner in a lot of ways in her career. And she's, you know, that champion swagger, as we have talked about continuously on this podcast today, it seems to be a recurring theme. But, it you know, it's one of those things that it really gives you that confidence to go in there and to stay calm in situations that otherwise you might not be calm in. And Misha Tate is the queen of doing, like, staying completely calm in situations where it's tough, where she's losing the fight and there's clear, you know, danger on the horizon. She regroups and she, you know, approaches it, you know, calmly, calculated, and she gets the wins oftentimes recently, as we've seen. So I think Misha Tate is, you know, just extremely dangerous because of her, you know, ability to, you know, take the damage, but not only take the damage, to be able to regroup and really, you know, if one thing isn't working, she'll try something else. She isn't afraid to do that. She's stepping out and she's becoming more, you know, I think more dangerous because of it. She's stepping out, doing different things when something else isn't working. And that's something that, you know, a lot of times that we didn't see from her before. She would kind of be a grind type fighter, try to take you down. But now she's feeling a little more confident. She's trying different things. Her striking has gotten a little better. And I think that, you know, as she continues to have these fights, and this fight with Amanda Nunes is one of those, it just builds her confidence even more. Yeah, for a potential rematch against Holly or Ronda, I think her confidence will be at an all-time high once she gets there.
I mean, she went out at UFC 196 and did what she needed to do in that fifth round. She was down 3-1. Maybe you give her a 10-8 in the second. She was, you know, we got to 2 minutes left, and I've said this on the podcast before. I started writing my subhead of Misha Tate is always the bridesmaid, and she put up a valiant effort, and she had a good opportunity in the second round where she had Holly Holm down but couldn't finish her. And then Holly was, oh, wait, all of a sudden Misha Tate spins her to the ground, takes her back, and chokes her out. She didn't just coast Brian. She grew from that and sort of learned from the bad advice she gave her boyfriend in Japan a couple years earlier and went out and finished when she needed it. And I think that puts so much extra confidence into things. And if I'm Misha Tate, if I go out and I starch Amanda Nunes the way that I think she's going to absolutely just win this one handily, I take the opportunity when Joe Rogan comes in and says, so what's next, blah, 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 to say, Rhonda, get your ass back here. You want to do this? You want to, you know, you've got two wins over me, whatever. Let's do it in New York. If you're not ready, come see me, Holly. We can do this again. Use this opportunity to further bolster your name, to further remind everybody, because it's one of the things, and she's talked about it. There was a great interview she did with Donovan Bennett from Sportsnet where she said, you know, I understand that for right now, I'm always going to be linked to Ronda and people are always going to ask me about it. So I decided going through this press circuit that I will address it. But after this, after I get this win, I want to talk about me, because I am the champion. I have done what I needed to do, what I had to do to get to this point. I beat the girl that beat her, and yes, I understand that I haven't beat Ronda, but maybe we cross that bridge later. We don't know if she's ever coming back. Let's talk about what I'm doing right now. And for my money, it's pretty damn amazing. I mean, she's looked great over her last three fights. It's a five-fight winning streak. I think she extends it to six. I think she gets a finish somewhere in the third or fourth round. I know you're picking her. How does she get it done?
Yeah, I mean, that's a thing that I've been kind of going back and forth about, because, you know, on one end, I can definitely see, you know, this being a tough fight, because Amanda Nunes is, you know, is a tough fighter. She's, you know, she's one of those fighters that is tough to finish. But at the same time, I do see Miesha Tate making a statement here, and I'm predicting a third round submission after, you know, Amanda gets a bit tired in that first round. Miesha starts putting it on, and then I think the third is when we'll see that nice slick submission finish from Miesha Tate.
Before we get to the final championship fight that we will talk about here on the Keyboard Kimura podcast, we have to address the heavyweight fight that is the penultimate fight of International Fight Week. That might be the most anticipated fight overall, because it is the return of the Beast Incarnate, the former next big thing, the former UFC heavyweight champion, Brock Lesnar. In a fight against Mark Hunt, which is just like, honestly, it has zero real stakes in the heavyweight division, and I do not give a damn, because you've got Brock Lesnar fighting Mark Hunt. This is just like this fits the let's just put together the odd carnival sideshow fight to a T. We've talked about Bellator doing it in weird ass ways with nostalgic dudes from the UFC like Hoyce Gracie and Ken Shamrock, or doing the Kimbo thing before Ferg passed, God rest his soul. This is the way to do it. This is Mark Hunt, who is still active, coming off two straight first round walk-offs. Brock Lesnar's a perfect dude to bring in, parachute in on this event a month before, and just throw him out there, because win or lose, people are tuning in. And whenever you attach him to a fight card, people are going to be interested. I cannot wait to see this. It is like 4 days away, and I still have no clue how this plays out. What say you?
I mean, you know, when this news was announced, you know, the first time when I heard about it, I legitimately thought it was fake news. I thought I was getting, you know, my leg pulled. I was like, yeah, Brock Lesnar's coming back, I'm sure. And then when I saw the trailer, I was just like, oh boy, it's happening. And it's one of those surreal things that, you know, Brock Lesnar was such a gigantic star. He was the mega star before Conor McGregor, before Ronda Rousey. He was that dude. He was the crossover, you know, guy, and just a huge larger than life kind of figure. To see, you know, him back in the octagon, I mean, that's absolutely crazy. And I think, like you said, as far as, you know, real rankings and what it does for the heavyweight division, you know, it doesn't do much. But guess what? Who cares?
Right.
You know, right. Yeah. And that's the thing. This is one of those fights that is just going to be absolutely fun to watch. And stylistically, you know, you see, you know, Mark Hunt with these crazy power bombs that he throws, you know, just sleeps dudes and walks away and kind of just
throws up his hands and kind of looks at them, looks at the ref, and is just like, we're done, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I got shit to do.
Yeah, exactly. And on the other hand, you have a wild freaking grizzly bear from the prairies of Saskatchewan.
Reppin' Merrifield, Saskatchewan.
Yeah, exactly.
Brock Lesnar walking to the cage in a UFC fight kit emblazoned with a maple leaf.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it's really just surreal. And honestly, I mean, I couldn't have thought, you know, I mean, any matchup that you could have put together with Brock Lesnar would have been an exciting matchup, because it's Brock Lesnar. But the added bonus of having Mark Hunt across the cage from him just makes me giddy inside. I mean, I'm at a loss right now. I can't figure out, you know, necessarily how it's going to play out. I do have the, you know, a feeling that Mark Hunt being the more active fighter, he does come in with an advantage. But at the same time, man, it's Brock Lesnar. In his prime, you know, when before his illness took over, before, you know, the Overeem and Velasquez fights, remember what this dude was doing. He was just mauling guys. And, you know, if he comes anywhere close to that, just anywhere close to that, it could be a big problem for Mark Hunt.
Well, and that's the really interesting thing to me, is because my initial reaction was Brock Lesnar is facing a dude that hits like a ton of bricks and he never liked getting hit. And so my initial thought was Mark Hunt, no problem. Then the more I got thinking about it, like, it's not like Brock Lesnar has been literally just sitting on the farm in Merrifield, Saskatchewan, doing nothing for the last 5 years. He's been wrestling, predetermined outcomes or not. Still athletes, still takes a lot of energy, still takes a lot of strength, cardiovascular endurance, all of those things. He is still a NCAA Division I national champion. That wrestling pedigree and acumen doesn't just disappear overnight. He doesn't suddenly forget how to wrestle. As good as Mark Hunt's takedown defense has gotten over the years, he has not had to try to stop a double leg from a 265-pound man that nearly walked on to the Minnesota Vikings after never having played football in his life. Mm-hmm. And so I get to the, like, now I'm not sure. I really don't know what the hell happens here. This is going to be one of those fights where the laptop will get closed and I will just put my feet up and sit there and watch it, because I think anything can happen. I think Mark Hunt can one punch Brock Lesnar and walk this off in 15 seconds. I think Brock Lesnar can take Mark Hunt down and maul him, as you said, like he did to Frank Mir in their second fight. I think he can kind of slip and move a little bit because he is deceptively quick and he is deceptively athletic. There's so many ways this can go. I'm honestly not trying to be that dude that just hedges and pushes. I'm probably going to flip a coin on Friday night before we publish these predictions to figure out who I'm picking.
Yeah, I mean, it really is tough to say. And then we haven't seen Brock for a while, but I that was also a good point that you brought up. I mean, he has been active. A lot of people think that, you know, Brock Lesnar, you know, being away from the UFC means that he hasn't been doing anything, which is
right.
Which is totally, you know, false. Obviously, he's been doing, you know, a lot of activity, and wrestling takes a lot, you know, like you said, a lot of cardiovascular strength, a lot of, you know, weightlifting and just training overall, and wrestling. It's tough. It's a tough way to make a living, for sure. So, you know, while it's not fight training necessarily, he's been definitely active. And I think that, you know, he's going to be in a lot better shape than I think a lot of people are expecting. So, you know, given Mark Hunt as well, kind of a dude who is, you know, notorious for having some tough weight cuts in the past, and, you know, maybe, you know, coming in here, he might rely on that knockout, you know, a little too much. That could give Lesnar an opportunity to come in and friggin' just run at him like a grizzly bear, and then try to tear his head off on the ground. I mean, it could very well happen. So I'm with you. I might do a coin flip at the time. You know, I'm not sure yet. I can't give a definitive answer over, you know, Hunt or Lesnar.
If you send me your picks, I'm probably going to pick the opposite just to try to gain that, make up that fight in the predictions, which, oh, by the way, I think I'm leading going into International Fight Week, if I'm not mistaken.
You are mistaken, my friend. We are tied.
We are tied. All right. Yeah. Well, I've drawn even going into the busiest month of the year, so I like my chances. It is the Keyboard Kimura Podcast on Province Sports Radio International Fight Week preview. We get to the final bout of the week. Daniel Cormier, John Jones, Part 2, Light Heavyweight Championship Unification Fight. I wrote about each of these people individually, DC, yesterday for a story that is up online today in Wednesday's print edition. John Jones will come out on Friday. I think this is a fight that both dudes have so much to lose in this fight. I think DC knows that this is do or die. If you don't beat John Jones, you can't, you know, people are always going to challenge the legitimacy of you being a champion. I think it makes him question whether he goes back to heavyweight, whether he keeps fighting at all. And for John Jones, I think this is, do I still have what I had back when I was the John Jones that we now know he was? Partying, drinking, carrying on, getting in trouble, but still being a sublime talent when he stepped into the octagon? Or is he that dude that looked a little rusty, that looked a little slow against Ovince St. Pro? As DC has talked about, the 25-year-old the 28-year-old, sorry, that's middle-aged. I think setting those things aside, and because we don't know yet whether that OSP fight was an aberration of 18 months off and a change of opponents and John kind of playing it safe, I think you have to just look at these two skill for skill, talent for talent. And to me, as much as I love Daniel Cormier, and I think what he has accomplished in his career to this point doesn't get enough credit, I still think John Jones is a level above him. And I think this is a fight where John, if he can go out and do what he said and make this look easier than the first fight, I think we have to start talking about John Jones as far and away the greatest fighter in the history of this sport. Am I putting too much into this? Am I overthinking this?
No, not at all. I mean, man, the stakes are high for both these guys in this fight. I mean, for Daniel Cormier, like you said, if he doesn't win this fight, he's forever the guy that lost to John Jones twice. I mean, and that's just the bottom line. Daniel Cormier could win every single fight for the rest of his career, win against a bunch of heavyweights, become the heavyweight champion if he you know, so chooses. He's still going to be the dude that lost twice to John Jones.
Right.
That's the bottom line. Unfortunately, that's just how he's going to be remembered. And I think that for John Jones, this is that fight that, you know, he needs to win, and he needs to prove to everyone that, you know, he is the GOAT. He is undoubtedly the best mixed martial artist that, you know, there is today, potentially that there's ever been. And I think that this goes a long way in proving that, especially if he comes out and has a great performance. And, you know, I'm of that, you know, sort of, you know, school of thought that believe that John Jones in the fight against OSP, you know, I did think that the late, you know, matchup change fighting a southpaw did, you know, kind of mess him up a little bit. I do believe that he's a guy who, you know, trains with, you know, Greg Jackson and you know, Winklejohn down there in New Mexico. And those guys are game planners. They are, you know, very calculated, well thought out. So when you have a late change like that, it does throw you off a bit. And I understand that, you know, people were disappointed by the performance against OSP and said, oh, well, if Daniel Cormier was in there, you know, he would have absolutely cleaned up, you know, right. John Jones. Just shut up. You know what I mean? I think that's absolutely ludicrous, because I think that John Jones, you know, and he's proven this before, is the kind of guy that rises to the occasion. You know, he did it against, you know, Gustafson when times were getting tough. He, you know, he's done it against multiple guys in his career, against Vitor Belfort, who almost submitted him. You know, he's the guy who matches the level of, you know, his opponent, I feel. And if Daniel Cormier is going to come out and, you know, try to take John's head off and try to really finish him, I think John's going to match that and he's going to surpass that. And I think that's, you know, what we're going to see at UFC 200.
The point you make about the late change and how much John and his team rely on or focus on game planning can't be underscored. It's so pivotal. John is such a student of this game and sits with Brandon Gibson, with Izzy Martinez, with Professor Tusa Alcantara, and figures out what they're going to do in terms of this guy does this, this is how we counter it, and to get OSP, who, as you said, a southpaw and a very unorthodox one, at that on short notice when you're preparing for a compact, powerhouse wrestler with good kickboxing, but pretty straightforward. There's nothing flashy about Daniel Cormier. It's a definite change. So I agree with you that he did sort of play it safe, not put himself in any bad spots, get 25 minutes under his belt, shake off some of that rust from 18 months on the sidelines, and some of maybe even the questions of, all right, how's it going to feel to be back in here after all this time? I think he gets it done in impressive fashion on Saturday night. Don't know that he gets a finish because DC is tough as nails and tough to put away. But I do think John Jones unifies the title, reclaims the title that he never lost in competition, and this becomes the first entry in Chapter 2, which I think is just going to become as impressive as Chapter 1 has been.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I'm going to go out on a limb and say John Jones finds the finish this time. Yeah, and I feel that it's, you know, it'll probably happen in the later rounds, I'm guessing 4 or 5, but I think that, you know, it's going to, you know, reach a point where John Jones is going to, you know, get that complete swagger back. He's going to say, you know what, I'm going for it. And he's going to finish Daniel Cormier in this fight and put, you know, a close to this chapter, to this saga with DC about, you know, maybe, you know, Daniel would have beaten him in the, if, you know, if he was in OSP's position, all this stuff. I think John Jones is going to put an exclamation point on his return and his return to championship status, full championship status as the undisputed light heavyweight champion.
Before we get out of here, before we wrap up our International Fight Week preview, one or two fights or fighters that we haven't talked about yet that people are kind of sleeping on a little bit, that are getting shuffled into the background because there is so much awesomeness going on the rest of this week that you're really looking forward to, guys that stand out, guys that you think listeners and fight fans should definitely be tuning in to see.
Oh man, where do I even start? I mean, it is absolutely nuts and stacked. All of these fights, you know, you look at UFC 200, I'd love to see, but definitely, you know, one that I'm very interested, you know, in sort of seeing how it plays out, you know, against two, you know, heavyweights who are, you know, kind of, you know, right in that championship mix, the former UFC heavyweight champion Cain Velasquez against Travis Brown. A really interesting fight, I think. You know, Cain obviously has had, you know, multiple, you know, injuries and had problems since, you know, that fight against Verdum, which he lost in Mexico City. You know, it will be very interesting to see what Cain Velasquez we get, you know, against a Travis Brown who is very dangerous as well and who can finish fights. He's done it multiple times. I'm really excited about this fight, you know, more so to see, you know, what Cain can bring to the table, because, you know, I am a little bit concerned about how he's going to look after, you know, multiple injuries and just a long layoff and, you know,
another long layoff.
Exactly. And for Travis Brown, it's a great opportunity. This is a golden opportunity. If ever you had a chance to beat, you know, Cain Velasquez, I think this is the time. So to me, you know, that's a huge fight and a super interesting one in my mind.
Yeah, crazy that we're going into a Cain Velasquez fight, his first fight since losing the title to Fabricio Verdum a little over a year ago in Mexico City at UFC 188. And we're not, or 188, 190, I can't remember. Might have been 190. They all blur together. I think it was 190. And we're not really talking about it. It's insane. That's how stacked these cards are. I'm going to be the guy that goes one fighter from each of the three cards. Thursday night, you mentioned heavyweights for yours. I'm mentioning heavyweights for mine. The homie Derek Lewis, the best UFC fighter to follow on social media, @TheBeast_UFC, taking on Roy Big Country Nelson. We know where Big Country is. We know that he's sort of that gatekeeper to the top 10. This is a favor Derek Lewis to just take that next step. And in talking to him, I know he does not care about taking the next step. He wants to knock dudes out. He wants to fight every 2 or 3 months. And he wants to get paid to take care of his kids that don't show him enough respect. his words, not mine. Still going to be a hell of a fight. Both dudes want to get in there and just throw them cinder blocks. Somebody's getting knocked out. That's the other fun thing about Derek Lewis. You're like, so how's this play out, big man? And he's like, somebody's going night-night. I ain't even going to say who, but somebody is. Like, there's no like, I'm going to knock this dude out. It's just we're heavyweights. We're going to fire leather at each other, and somebody's going to sleep. Can't wait to see that one. On the middle card of the three, the Korean Superboy Do-Ho Choi. Saw him in Vancouver for his UFC debut. He followed that up by knocking out Sam Cecilia. He's 2-0 in the UFC. He hasn't been in the octagon for over 2 minutes yet. That's awesome. I want to see if he can do it again against Thiago Tavares, a seasoned veteran, a guy that's sort of not in the top 15 in the very deep featherweight division, but sort of a guy that we can use as a bit of a measuring stick, as a bit of a litmus test for the Korean Superboy, who I think has elite potential. I'm also going to throw another one in here. You got to be looking forward to the debut of Ill Will Brooks, former Bellator lightweight champ. Like, again, this is how stacked this week is. Mm-hmm. A dude is coming over from being the Bellator lightweight champ, facing an experienced, talented dude in Ross Pearson, and ain't nobody talking about it because we got so much other stuff to talk about. Ill Will Brooks, I think, can show that he's a player in this lightweight division with a good win over Ross Pearson. Looking forward to that. And when we get to UFC 200, like you, there's so many things you could pick from. Return of Kat Zingano, for me, is the one. I got a chance to talk to her for UFC.com in advance of this fight. Kat is one of the more inspirational and motivating people that I have ever talked to in my life. You guys know the story by now. You know, supposed to fight Ronda Rousey and coach on Tough, blows out her knee, comes back. Her husband takes his own life. She comes back from all of that, beats Amanda Nunes, gets the fight with Ronda, loses in 14 seconds, and just said, I gotta go. Has taken the last 18 months off to, as she said, stop being strong and just take care of herself for a little bit. Gets a super tough matchup against Juliana Pena, who gets the opportunity to prove whether she's a contender. I think this is a fight that adds the winner into that Ronda Holly Holm class to challenge Miesha Tate or Amanda Nunes if she happens to pull off the upset in the women's bantamweight division. So that one's there. It's going to be a crazy week. It is going to be a tremendous 72 hours, the best 72-hour stretch in MMA history. I challenge you to find a better run of fights. UFC 200 is just going to be bonkers. I cannot wait for it. I know you are excited. I am as well. We will be, I'm sure, tweeting up a storm about it. You can find Pat at Pat Shiviklinski.
CWIKLINSKI. Read the Keyboard Kimura blog on theprovince.com. Follow them on Twitter at Keyboard Kimura, or visit them on Facebook at facebook.com/keyboardkimura.
Set up their referential link for everybody that was following Keyboard Kimura back in the days. It lives on. It's just in a different form. So does this podcast. We are back. We'll be back next week to wrap all of this goodness up. But until then, it feels like it's not enough to just say enjoy the fights. But goddamn, man, enjoy these fights. I know we will. We'll talk to you soon.